Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Bava Kama Daf Yud Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins 9 lines from the bottom of Daf Yud Aleph. You'll notice a double underline highlighting Omar Ula Omar Abelazar. In our previous shiur, we noted that we began a series of teachings that Ula quotes in the name of Reb Elazar. The first one had relevance to the information in our previous shiur. This second one is a brand new topic, and it's cited here simply because we have a list of teachings that Ula quotes in the name of Reb Elazar. And we pointed out that this list continues clear down Omid Beis. On the side of our Gemara, as each new teaching appears, we will have a nosei, a topic heading, and a corresponding number to that which is being taught. So here is number 2, and on the side in the margin of our Gemara, we've written the following. Shilya sheyotzisa miktsasa biyom rishonu miktsasa biyom sheni. Shilya is the placenta, the tissue matter that surrounds a fetus during pregnancy. Upon its emergence, we have halachas that are determined, that are affected. In this case, a shilya emerges part on the first day, and then the balance on the second day. Mimosai moinin lo yemei tuma v'tara. In the case of a human birth, the mother becomes defiled upon birth, tuma, tumas leida, and the emergence of the shilya is associated with the birth. So let's say only part of it emerged on day 1, and the rest of it on day 2, and when we speak about day 1, day 2, so we're talking about before sundown and after sundown. Before sundown is called day 1. After sundown would be then the beginning of the next day. A woman becomes tamea, defiled, for a period of 1 week in the case of a male birth, 2 weeks in the case of a female birth. Our point, or our issue, is from when do we start the counting? Later in the Gemara, another area of halacha will be referred to concerning a shilya, and that's in the case of an animal. An animal that's slaughtered, and you find inside the animal a fetus, that fetus is part of the mother, so that the slaughtering that you did for the mother covers whatever's found inside the mother. Even if the fetus happens to be alive when you slaughter the mother, technically speaking, that fetus does not need, on a Torah level, does not need to be slaughtered. The shilya of an animal is part of the animal. It's part of the tissue matter. I don't know how pleasant sounding it is to finely attuned culinary ears, but you could conceivably roast shilya, and it's edible. It's we'll call it a meat-like substance. If the shilya emerges, and let us say it's dangling outside the mother animal, and you slaughter the mother animal, so that which is outside the mother is certainly not included in the slaughtering of the mother. The details the considerations that apply, we will feature as we go on in the Gemara. I'm simply mentioning that at this point to show that the issue of shilya emergence has relevance to different areas of halacha. The human shilya, does it demonstrate birth? An animal shilya, what are the halachas regarding the shechita of the mother enabling me to eat that? Let's now turn to the Gemara. The Omar of Omar Ula, Omar Abulazar. The reason that the Gemara begins with the word ve Omar the Vav, and is because this is a continuation of the list of halachas that we started at the end of our previous year. So we say, and Ula, in the name of Abulazar, taught the following. Shilya shiyatsasa miksasa biyom rishon miksasa biyom sheni. A woman in giving birth, the shilya emerged partially on day one, and the rest on day two. Moinin lo min harishon. We count her days of defilement from the first day, from the moment the shilya partially emerged. Amale Rava. So Rava says to Ula, Ma daitocha lechumra. What is your intent in this ruling? Are you trying to issue a ruling of chumra, of stringency, of, we can say in colloquial terms, in trying to play it safe and hence rule defilement already from the beginning? Chumra dasi lidei kula hu. There is a potential for leniency in your ruling. In other words, it's a ruling that sounds like one of stringency, but it leads to leniency. To komitaris lo mirishon. When we speak about defilement starting from day one, that means that in the case of a male birth, after seven days pass, she will then be tar. So our notice, our counting has relevance to from what point we're going to declare her then purified, you know, it's undefiled. So that if you're going to count immediately from today, that means she's going to become purified from today, which maybe in other terms might mean she'll be purified a day earlier than had we not started counting from today, but rather from tomorrow. Ela Omar Rava, Lachush Choseshes. Mimna lo mimna ela lesheni. Rava issues a ruling whereby there is no element of leniency. Lochus choshesh means we suspect birth from day one. And any items that require purity that she may have come into contact from day one already will be declared unclean, will be declared defiled. However, the counting that leads to her eventual purification, departure from her state of defilement, that counting will not start from today, but rather from tomorrow, from day two. My komash molon. What is Ula in his ruling, as... accepting, of course, Rava's interpretation, what is he trying to teach us? That in that the emergence, the partial emergence of Shilya already is a determining factor in Halacha. My Komashman, what is he trying to tell us? And we say he, Rashi makes mention Ula, that said Choseshes. And the term Choseshes we saw in Rava. Rava's, and so we'll taking the cue from Rashi, we'll say Rava's interpretation of what Ula, in the name of Rabbi Elazar, must have really meant. So what's he trying to tell us? And I want to emphasize right now that these are Amoroyim. These are Amoraic scholars. And so what's the point? The Ein Miktsas Shilya below Vlad. Is he trying to tell us that whenever you have a partial shilya, there is definitely representation of offspring in there, of fetus? Now, halacha regards even a, we'll say, a dissolved fetus In other words, it's not a full organism that appears, but rather whatever material is within the shilia, even if it happens to be dissolved, it's nimuach, it nevertheless is considered in halachic terms a birth. I emphasize halachic terms. So is what Ula trying to tell us that you can't have a partial shilia without some fetal representation? If that's what he's trying to tell us, I don't need him for that Tanina. We have a Tanaic source which predates Ula, which already conveys that idea. And here we go into a different area of birth. We're dealing with animal births, but the principle is the same. Here, and here, what does it say? Shilya, the placenta of an animal, shiyasa miktsasa, that emerged before the animal was slaughtered. Again, we're dealing with a pregnant cow, pregnant sheep, and the shilya emerged partially before the mother is slaughtered. Asura bachila, the entire shilya is prohibited in being eaten. In other words, the act of slaughtering doesn't cover the shilya. Why? Simen vlad beisha, simen vlad bevehema. That partial shilya is a sign of birth. And once an animal is born, so the offspring is not does not receive the benefit, we'll say, of the slaughtering of the mother to entitle you to eat it. Of course, when you slaughter an animal, you can eat the animal's foot, you can eat the animal's limbs, obviously. But an offspring, once it emerges, is not considered a limb of the animal anymore. It's considered a separate entity. What do we see, though? From this source, from the fact that the shechita, the slaughtering of the mother, does not cover the partially emerged shilya, that shows us that partially emerged shilya is the sign of birth. Before we go further, there is detail that you find in Rashi that's quite important, not only for the Gemara here, but for the continuation of the Gemara as well. And we'll start with Rashi in the wide lines under the Gemara, text about halfway down, the Ein Mixas Shilya below Vlad. We had been asking, what is the point of Ula? Is he trying to tell me that Ein Mixas Shilya below Vlad, you can't have a partial shilya without a fetal representation? Umishum hachi, and because of that, because there is fetal representation, we mentioned it might have dissolved, but it's nevertheless something we reckon with as a birth. Umishum hachi choshesh shema roiv michui avlad yotze ba'oisa miktas. Since there is inevitably Vlad offspring represented in the partial shilya emergence, it could very well be that the majority of the Vlad is in that partial shilya emergence. So we're choshesh that maybe the majority of the Vlad is in that umechinofik roiv, and when the majority comes out, have le kiyolud, majority of fetus equals birth. And birth has ramifications, we said already, to the rules of counting the days of impurity. If a fetus comes out in a cut-up fashion, or in a mesuros, in a feet-first position, birth is determined by majority emergence. This is, by the way, in contrast to a normal head-first birth, where just by the emergence of the head, or the majority of the head, that already means born. But not so in our case, when we're dealing with a dissolved shilya, a dissolved vlad, that is, in the shilya. Umimna varei lo manya mirishon deshem alonafak rubo ad sheni. As far as actual counting is concerned, we're not going to count the days of impurity from the first day because maybe the majority did not come out on Sheni until the second day. Now, Rashi goes on to explain a very fine point, but it's a major point. Up till now, we've pointed out that it seems that Ula is trying to tell us that you can't have a partial placenta without some fetal representation. Rashi goes on, if there is such a phenomenon of partial placenta emergence with no vlad in there, lo have a chayshinon letame taros, we would not have been so stringent as to declare items that need to remain tahor as being defiled. Why would we not have considered them defiled? The kulehai lo chayshinon, we wouldn't have gone so far as to suggest defilement. The neimar, because in a case like that, if you could have partial shilya with no vlad, no fetus in there, and we say fetus, once again, we mean even dissolved fetus, we would, if that could be partial shilya with zero fetus, then we would not have been strict, we wouldn't have been stringent regarding declaring declaring defiled items like truma, like kochim, etc., the name on Trey Chumri, because in order to do so under such circumstances, we'd have to employ a double stringency, and that we avoid doing. Trey Chumri. What are the Trey Chumri? What would be the double stringency? One, Dilma Nafka, maybe there is Vlad. The Rov Nafka, and if there is Vlad, it would have to be majority. That's a double stage. That's a double step in stringency. However, we say that when partial shilya emerges, there is definitely vlad represented there. In order to be stringent, in order to, let's say, to, what would motivate us to be stringent? Only suspicion of one additional point. And that is that maybe in the partial fetus that emerged, there was actually the majority of the fetus there. But that, we're saying only because we're working with the given that when partial shilya emerges, there is definitely fetal representation. The doubt is how much. So, is that what Ula is trying to tell us? That partial emergence of placenta means that there is definite fetal representation. If that's what he is trying to teach us, that we know already from a Tanaic source. And that we saw in the case of the animal birth, partial placenta emergence, before the slaughtering of the animal, we declared the entire placenta to be prohibited. That, in other words, you can't eat it. It did not receive a slaughtering. Let us continue with the Rashi, four lines from the bottom. Hochi garsinon, simen vlad beisha v'simen vlad bevehema. Klomar. That phrase of the source means that ne shashilya simen vlad. Since the shilya emergence is the simen, is the sign of a fetus there, bein beisha bein bevehema, whether it be human, female, or animal, she'ein shilya below vlad. You won't have a shilya without a vlad. Elo sheni muach. You'll say, I don't see any birth there. It dissolved. V'chayshinon, and we suspect, shem aboyse mixes shiotze kledem shchita, maybe, in that partial amount of shilya that emerged before the slaughtering of the animal, hoya rubo shalubar, within the partial emergence, you had the majority of the fetus. Dissolved. The kaimalon, and we hold yotzaruba reza kiyolud veino nita b'shchita seim, that in the case of an animal birth, when the majority of the fetus emerges, it no longer benefits from the shchita of the mother. So our question is very simply, what does Ula teach me that I don't know from this Tanaic source? So we turn back to the Gemara at the bottom line in the middle. Imi masnisen, had I had just this Tanaic source, have amina, I would have thought. We continue at the top of Omid Beis. Diyesh mixas shilya below Vlad. That you could have a partial shilya with no Vlad in it. And you'll ask, if that's the case, then why are we prohibiting it from being eaten? Ugzeira mitzasa atukula. The reason we prohibit eating, i.e. the slaughtering of the mother doesn't cover it, is because if we were to allow eating of it with partial emergence, someone might come to think you can eat it even with total emergence. And if you had the entire placenta emerging before you slaughtered the mother, then it certainly would not be something you can eat. The slaughtering didn't cover it. However, as far as fetal representation within the placenta, within the shilya, that could very well be that there was no fetal representation whatsoever in the partial shilya that emerged. That's what I would have thought had I had just the Tanaic source. And if that were the case, that I could have partial shilya without any fetal representation, so as far as the laws of ritual impurity associated with human birth, you would then have to say that if partial shilya emerged, I wouldn't declare defiled things that that woman touched. Kalmash malon, that's therefore I need Ula to tell me that when partial shilya emerges, there is definite fetal representation. The only doubt we have is it the majority or not? And as we said before, being that that's only one element of doubt, that there's a sum total of only one element of doubt, i.e. amount of fetus that is there. So then we exercise, and as a result of that, we're entitled to exercise the stringency. We take a look at Rashi at the top. Rashi explains what I would have thought, that without Ula, Diyesh mixes Shilya below Vlad, Udeko Asri Lo Bachila, and that which we prohibit eating the Shilya, in a case of partial emergence, and saying that the slaughtering doesn't cover it, doesn't cover that which remains in the mother, Gzeira Mixasa Tukula, we employ that stringency, we prohibit when part comes out in anticipation of if it all had come out before the slaughtering. V'hai dikotoni simen vlad, the Tanaic source that used that expression, simen vlad, lav amiktsosakoi, that's not referring to a case of partial emergence, elo hachikomar, but rather it means as follows, asuro bachila, the placenta that emerged is prohibited in eating, Gezeira otu hecho de nafka kula, and it, we even when part emerge, we prohibit it in anticipation of a case where the entire had come out. The osu lemeimar, and people would then come to say erroneously, had we not prohibited the shilya, they would think ein kan valad, there's no vlad here, there's no fetal representation. And if it would be withdrawn, if the shilya would be withdrawn within the animal, they would think mistakenly, tishteri b'shchita soheim, let it be allowed with the subsequent slaughtering of the mother. V'koachli nevela, deivadai simen vlad b'isha, when the entire placenta came out, that everyone agrees is the simen of a vlad of b'isha. So the term in the Tanaic source, Simen Vlad, was referring to a case of an entire placenta having emerged. Avol, Gabi Isha. But this is again what I would have thought. without ulam. Aval gabi isha lo nechush lemiktsas letamei taros derishon. In the case of a human birth and partial shilya emerged, if it were a possibility that there was no vlad in there whatsoever, we would not have defiled items that she touched from the first day. Tahasam lekol lemiktsar otu kula. In the case of a woman, there would be no reason for making a gzera partial shilya emergence in anticipation of full shilya emergence. There people would see that when the child is born on the second day, we declare her defiled, and there it's clear that as a result of the birth she becomes defiled. There would be no confusion on the part of the public. Komash malon, therefore Ula comes to tell us that even from the partial emergence, you have to suspect that there was a majority of fetal representation there. So now we turn back to the Gemara, just to repeat that the komash malon that we saw in the second line from the top, third word on the line, that is a reference to what Ula is trying to tell us, that when you have miksas shilya emerging, you do have to suspect. Suspect is not the right word. When partial shilya emerges, you know that there is fetal representation. The only thing at that point is, do we suspect that there was the majority in that partial emergence? So the halacha says we are choshesh. We suspect that maybe there was rove of the vlad in that partial shilya emergence, and we declare defiled from the first day things that she may have touched. And we go on now to number three. And on the side of more nosei, we call number three ein poidin b'chor odom shenerag toich shloshim yom. This deals with the need for redeeming a firstborn male child. Let us say that the firstborn male child, which ordinarily is redeemed on the 30th, after it reaches 30 days of life, let's say it was killed within the first 30 days. For Omar Ula, Omar Rabbi Lazar, Bechor Odom, firstborn male child, Shinitraf Besoich Shloshim Yoim, that was killed within 30 days, Ein Poidin Oisoi. There is no redemption that's necessary. The Rashi points out that we're focusing on the word on Neharag, it was killed, as opposed to a normal, or say a natural death, that already from the verse we know you don't redeem it. You redeem a child only once it reaches 30 days of life. In the case, however, that it was killed, you might have thought, had it not been killed, this child would have continued living. And it's not considered a nafil, not considered a miscarriage. If it dies on its own, then we regard it as a nafil. A nafil is a child that really didn't complete its full term pregnancy, and hence it certainly does not require redemption. But a child that was killed, as far as the child's own development is concerned, it might have been a healthy child. It would have lived till 30 days, and even if it was killed within, had I not been told this, I would think that maybe it needs redemption, where the father pays 5 pieces of silver to a kohen for the child's redemption. We call this pidyon haben. So Ula tells us that a bechor that's nitraf, that's killed within 30 days, it does not need redemption. V'chein toni rami bar chama, rami in a Tanaic source taught the same thing. Mitoch shenema podoy sifdeh, since the pasuk uses that expression, and we have the pasuk, by the way, on the side of the Gemara, in our margin, we've written kol peterechem l'chol basar asher yakivu l'Hashem ba'adam uv'abeima yelach. Ach podo sifte es bechor ha'adam. So you see the double expression podo sifte. Yachal, the Gemara continues, Yachal afilu nitraf besoch shloshim yom. Would this be the ruling even if it was killed within 30 days that the father needs to redeem the child? Tamalomar ach. That also you can see in the pasuk. Chalak. The word ach is a chalak, is a word of limitation. So that redemption is needed, but not in all cases. Not in cases that the child was killed within 30 days. Number four, we feature on the side of our Gemara, the Nosei, Behemo Gaso Niknes B'Meshicha. Large animals, the means of acquisition in a transfer of ownership of a large animal, how is that accomplished? So here we're going to raise the issue of it being transferred. The deal clincher is B'Meshicha. When we speak about a deal clincher, by the way, it means that at that point, if one party wants to back out, wants to reverse the deal, he can't do so. So we read in the Gemara, V'yomer ulo omer abalozer, behemo gasa nikneis b'meshicha. A large animal is acquired through meshicha. Meshicha essentially means the new owner, the purchaser, the acquirer, draws the animal. The animal walks a bit, as a result of the new owner drawing the animal. The ho anan tnan b'mesira. The Gemara asks, but have we not learned that a large animal is acquired through mesira? Mesira would be handing over the reins of the animal, the rope attached to the animal's neck. That's mesira. But in the case of mesira, the animal itself doesn't need to walk. There's no animal movement per se. So how can Ula teach us a means of acquisition that doesn't correspond to what the Tanaic source tells us? The Gemara answers, who, the Omar ki haitana. Who, that is Ula, the Amora, is based on a different Tanaic source, the Sanya. And you see here, the Chachomim Omrim, Zu v'zu b'meshicha. The Chachomim hold, whether it be a zoo, a large animal, the zoo, a small animal, like a sheep, a goat, they are acquired through Meshicha. And we've dashed underlined Meshicha, indicating that Behemah Gasa is acquired through Meshicha, and on this Ula based his ruling. Rabbi Shimon Oimer, zoo, vizu, bahagbo. Rabbi Shimon says, whether it be a small animal or even a large animal, it's acquired through hagbo, raising the animal, raising its height, in other words, off the ground, picking it up. You might ask, how do you pick up a 2-ton bull? So it doesn't mean you have to, with your arms, physically pick it up, but you can have it walk upon a platform or upon piled branches, and it thereby its level off the ground is raised. That's hagbah. But for our purposes, we wanted to emphasize Ula's ruling that Behemah Gasa is nikneis through meshicha, through drawing the animal, and you see a support for that, or a source for that, in the position of the Chachamim in the most recent Tanaic source. We continue with number five. On the side, the topic heading reads, Haim Shomim. Shomim means evaluate. Evaluate Habegodim. Haim Shomim Habegodim. Do we evaluate the Begodim that are on the on the backs of heirs that divide an estate? That's Haim Shom Abgam Shalem B'Shas Chalukas Yerusha. When we speak about the heirs of an estate, you will see the actual heirs themselves, the sons of the deceased, and that which is on the backs of their respective children. The Gemara. V'yomar ulo amra b'lozer ho'achim shechoku. Notice we have a numbering scheme. We're going to have one, Aleph and Beis, and then number two. So you have a family unit. The head of the family died. Ho'achim shechoku, the brothers, the sons of the deceased shechoku that are dividing the estate. Ma she'alein shomin. The clothing on their backs are evaluated as part of the value of this of the estate that has to be divided equally amongst the brothers. Uma she'al b'neim uvnoseim ein shomin. That which is on their children, their sons and daughters, are not subject to evaluation. Rashi points out the appearance of bringing children to a court is a bizarre. There's an element of disparagement for them to appear in court and have their clothing evaluated. So in order to preserve their dignity, they are not brought to court. The clothing that they're wearing is not part of the evaluation of the estate. Omar Rav Papa, Pa'omim Af Mashe Aleihem Ein Shamin. At times, even that which is on them. Now he uses the plural word, but could be the collective plural of eldest sons of deceased. Even that which is on them is not subject to evaluation. Mishkachas law, and this will come out, this will be found, Begodolachi, the eldest of the brothers. You might have amongst the brothers, the Godel, the eldest one, who represents the family in court. If there are any challenges to their father's estate, he represents the family. The Nichalahu de Lishtamun Mile. The other brothers prefer, are happy with him, the eldest brother, the one who represents them, being finely dressed. His fine apparel is actually to their collective benefit, so that to evaluate what he is wearing and say that this is his this will count towards his portion of the estate would not reflect the real value of the clothing, in the sense that his clothing are for their collective benefit. So it's not subject to evaluation in order to determine that particular eldest brother's value holdings in the estate. We come now to number 6. The nosei is on the side. Shomer shemoser l'shomer, a person hired or had in his service a shomer. A shomer is a bailey, someone who is charged with watching someone's articles. And in our Gemara, we'll discuss a shomer, the guard, who gave over his responsibility to someone else to guard. That's called shomer, shemoser l'shomer. Is that considered within the realm of responsible behavior on the part of the first shomer, who was charged with the responsibility of watching something, or is that irresponsible? In surveying the Gemara before the actual reading of the text, please notice Roman numerals 1 and a few lines later, number 2. Approach 1 will be highlighted with a diamond. And the diamond highlights in the first case potter, exemption. If any problem arises within the supervision of the second shomer, so the first shomer will be exempt, and the Gemara will offer quite a bit more detail than just merely exemption. Rava, in contrast, features as well shomer shemosel shomer. That's why you notice we squiggle underline that expression. That's the opening expression, and Rava's approach is in the opposite direction. Chayav. That for a first shomer to deliver items to a second shomer for watching someone that the original owner did not appoint, that's an act of irresponsibility. Different levels of shomrim have different levels of responsibility. There's something called a shomer chinam, an unpaid, a person who does this service gratis. So his level of responsibility is in accordance with the fact that he's not being paid to watch. And that means he's responsible only if damage happens as a result of pshia, of negligence. However, theft, loss, certainly oines, he will be exempt. A shomer sochar, on the other hand, is a paid bailey. Sochar means a wage or a fee that he receives for watching items. Since he's getting paid, he also has a higher level of responsibility. Not only is he responsible if damage happens as a result of negligence, but even if it results as a result of theft or loss, geneva, v'aveda. He is, however, exempt in the case of oinus, a shomer socher, if damage happens or loss happens as a result of circumstances beyond his control. We call that oinus. He will be exempt. We need all of this information by way of background in order to appreciate what we'll now see in the Gemara. So by way of markings, we already pointed out, and on the side we have our Mivneh, the diamond heights, Shnei, Deus, Binyan, and Al, two opinions regarding the responsibility of the first Shomer in a case that he delivered the item to a second Shomer to watch. Two opinions. Then there's a dashed underline which highlights the expression velo mibaya, which means it goes without saying, thus and thus, etc. You'll see how the structure is symmetrical in the Gemara, and we highlight with that marking velo mibaya elo afilu. And if you look very closely at the direction that this diagonal dashed underlining takes place, you'll see there's a difference, and it reflects the lo mibaya. I don't have to tell you about this, but even this. Now the Gemara. V'yomar u'lomar b'lozar shomer shemosar l'shomer poter. If a shomer gave something to a second shomer to watch, something happens, damage happens in the watch of the second man, the first shomer is exempt. He is exempt based on all the exemptions that he originally was able to benefit from. And Rashi points out this idea of ptur, of exemption, shows us that it was not an act of pshia, it's not an act of negligence on the first shomer's part in giving it to a second shomer to watch. Velo mibaya, it goes without saying, shomer chinim shemosu l'shomer sochar, that the first shomer who was not paid, who gave it now to someone that will get paid for his watching, that the first shomer is exempt. That's obvious. The aluya lishmiroso, he raised the quality of guarding by giving it to someone that would be paid. So that it goes without saying that the first shomer will be exempt with whatever exemptions he was able to benefit from. And a shomer chinom was exempt for geneva, aveda, oines. The only thing that he's not exempt for is pshia. But as far as all the other reasons for loss that may have resulted, he will be exempt. And why? Because by giving it to a second shomer, he's not acting with recklessness. And it goes without saying that it'll be exempt when he gives it to a shomer sachar, where he's raising the level of shmira. Elo afilu shomer sachar shemosar lo shomer chinam. But even in the case of someone who was paid for his services, who gave it to someone who would continue watching it gratis, that too is not called pshia. Even there, even that case, tahashta gruigare lishmiroso, here there is a lessening in quality of shmira. Girue is to worsen or lower, a descent, we'll say, in the level of shmira. He, the shomer socher, is potter, is exempt if, let's say, some type of ones happens. A shomer socher, we said, is exempt for ones, and we said that by giving it over to a second shomer, he doesn't lose whatever exemptions he may have had at the beginning. A shomer socher was exempt for ones, something that happens beyond one's control. Here, too, even though he's lowering the quality of shmira, he nevertheless enjoys his exemption of ones. Shrei Moser LeBendas, he gave it to someone of knowledge, of mental capacity. So hence, by giving it to a ben das, that's not called reckless behavior. Rava Omar. And Rava approaches this with a total opposite approach. Rava says, Shemer Shemosar L'Shemer Chayav. The first Shomer will be obligated to compensate, even in the case of Ones. This is called recklessness. The Lomi Baya, and it goes without saying that he'll be obligated, Shomer Socher Shemosar L'Shemer Chinam De Grue Gari L'Shmiraso, where a paid Bailey transfers supervision to an unpaid individual where you're lowering the quality of the Shmirah. The unpaid individual who gives it to a paid individual where you're elevating the quality of the Shmirah, that's no excuse here. Chayav, the first Shomer will be Chayav even in a case of Ones. The Omarle, the Balabayas, the owner of the original item, can say, At mehemnisli b'shvua, you, I trust when it comes to taking an oath. A shomer, in order to be exempt, not only does he claim the type of exemption, not only does he claim the cause was that type of cause that would lead to his exemption, but he has to swear to that effect. So the owner says, "From you, I know you. I trust you. You're someone that you're a familiar quantity to me, and hence I was willing to accept your oath. However, hi, the guy you gave it to, lo mehem en li b'shua, I don't trust his oath. I don't trust what he says, and therefore, by giving it to him, you're acting totally against my will, and that's a form of reckless behavior." Number 7. On the side of the Gemara under our topic heading, we've written Ligvois Avodim Ketashlum Chov. Tashlum Chov means payment of a debt. Can someone who is coming to collect his debt collect from their slaves? Now, when it comes to debt collection, we make a distinction between the original party that incurred the debt, heirs of that party, if the original party didn't pay off the debt and the debt collector, the creditor is coming to collect his debt, and a case of items sold, where an original debtor, someone who owed money, sold his property to others. And in our discussion, we're going to be focusing on the ability to collect from slaves. We know from other sources, the pasuk says, "V'snachatem oisom levnechem acharechem lereshes achuza." Slaves are paralleled in scriptural terms to land, and we know that land is a source of debt collection from many, many different places in the Shas. We see this time and time again. Collection of debts from land. Collection of debts from portables, on the other hand, is something that can happen, but only when it's the original party that incurred the debt that's being collected from. When you're dealing with heirs or purchasers of items, so portables, by rule of thumb, are not subject to collection for payment of original party's debts. Once again, in our Gemara, we're going to be focusing on Avodim. And I would like to point out that this issue is going to preoccupy the Gemara essentially till the top part of Daf Yud Beis Omid Beis. So the discussion of collection of debts from slaves, meaning slaves as a means of payment of debt, is a discussion that lasts all the way till Yud Beis Omid Beis. The Gemara opens, and we'll just read a line or two of Gemara, and then take note of some structural issues. The Omar Ula Amar Belozer Hilchasa Goyven Min Havodim. The halacha is his ruling is that collection of debts can be made from slaves. Slaves are part of a person's property, his holdings, and you can collect from slaves. In other words, this, the ownership of the slave is transferred to the one to whom the money is owed. Omar le Rav Nachman le'ula. So Rav Nachman asks, you, Ula, just quoted Rebbe Lozer. Omar Rebbe Lozer afilu miyasmi? Does Rebbe Lozer say, even from heirs? Yasmi literally are orphans. Orphans who inherited their father's estate. Are you saying that debt collectors, their father owed money, that their father's debt is paid through the debt collector's collection of the slaves they inherited, as if they were land, like karka, which certainly the balchov is able to collect? So Ula says, lo, mine. When Rav Lozer said collection is made from slaves, it means from the original debtor himself, not from not collecting them from his heirs. The Gemara, Rav Lozer asks then, I should say Rav Nachman asks, mine? Is Rav Lozer's teaching of slaves being collected from the original debtor himself? Afilu miglimo dal kasbi, you can collect even the shirt off his back. That's obvious. So what is Rebbe Lozer teaching me that I need him for? People, Amoroyim and certainly Tanoyim don't come to teach me that which is obvious. So what was meant that Hilchus Goyvin Menu Avodim? What's the case? Hochabamay Askinon, here, what are we dealing with? Shasoy Apoitiki, Hidarova. The original debtor, the one who incurred the debt, designated as a means of collection the slave. Apotiki is a type of, we'll say, artificial creation of a lien. It's actually an abbreviated expression, and you can see Rashi quotes this two lines from the bottom, apotekoi, that your collection will be from here. And here where the debtor labeled the slave as a means of collection will be made by taking the slave. Once again, what are the circumstances? Kidarova, Dioma Rava, also Avdoi Apotiki, if a person upon borrowing money designated the collection to be made from his slave, Umachroi, and this is really the main point, he then sold the slave, Balchov Gova Heimenu, the lender can collect from the one who purchased the slave as a means of paying off the debt. So what Rebbe Lozer is saying is that if the slave is sold, the Balchov, the creditor, can collect from the purchaser of the slave. In contrast, shoyroi apotiki u'machroi, if a person designated his animal as a means of collection and then sold it, ein balchov deve heimenu, the balchov, the original party's creditor, cannot collect from it. My taima, why the distinction? Ha is le kola, v'ha les le kola. Before we translate that, it's important to use the term suspecting or unsuspecting individual. Specifically, one who purchases an item. Is it fair to set him up as a source of someone else's debts being paid off? If he bought an item that he knew was subject to a lien, that's the idea of he knew, is the concept of kol. Kol literally means a voice, public knowledge. With regard to a slave that is designated as a means of paying off someone's debts, that creates public noise. And that when someone buys a slave under such circumstances, he knew that he knew he was taking a risk. He was buying something that someone else had a previous lien on it. That idea of kol, of a public knowledge, being being the reality, that's true when you're dealing with a slave, when a slave is designated. However, if someone designates their ox as a means of payment, that doesn't create any public noise. People are not aware. So if someone bought a shor that was designated as a means of collection, he wouldn't be expected to know that there was a lien on it. Therefore, it wouldn't be fair to subject him to collection. And hence, if someone designated his animal as a means of collection and then sold the animal, the original party's creditor would not be able to collect the animal from that purchaser. Now, we did not emphasize the structure element of this sukkah. Let's go back. We have an aleph in a volcano shape, and there's a double underline expression on the side of the Gemara. We have a mivne, aleph and beis. The beis we'll see only when we turn to daf yud beis. Shnei teguvos shel ula, two reactions of ula be'inyan vias avodah miyaseimim, regarding the issue of collecting slaves from heirs. Im eved mugdar kekarka, is an eved considered like land? Azai, or I should say, if an eved, if a slave is mugdar, is categorized as karka, oz nitan ligvos oisom yisemim, then you are able to collect them from heirs. Velo yicholulu beklal, and they will not be included in the category, in the rule, the metaltel yasmi lo mishtabdi, that the portables of heirs are not subject to collection. When heirs inherit their benefactors' portables, it might be ceramics, expensive cutlery, portraits, or whatever, but they're portables. Those are not subject to the collection of their father's creditor. How do we look at slaves? So in the Gemara that we've learned so far, we spoke about slave collection, and we mentioned slave collection that is not from the Yesoimim. The idea of Goyvin min Avadim, so we suggested that would apply in the case of someone who made his Eved into an apotiki, attached a lien onto the slave. But for our purposes, we want to emphasize not from heirs. That was approach Aleph, whereby Ula said to Rav Nachman, not from heirs. When we get to Amud Beis, and you can see that as we turn to Amud Beis, if you need to scroll ahead to Amud Beis, or click on Amud Beis, or turn to Amud Beis, but you got to get to Daf Yud Beis Amud, that is Yud Beis Amud Aleph, I was saying erroneously Amud Beis, no, Daf Yud Beis, it says on the second line from the top, you notice a double underline, and it says there Afilu Miyasmi, a second version of Ula. Let's now read the Gemara. This, it's a storyline that continues. Up till now, we had seen Ula and his being confronted by Rav Nachman, and Ula said to Rav Nachman, no, slaves are not going to be collected from heirs, from Yesoimim. Labosar den Afak, we're reading the Gemara at the top of Daf Yud Beis. When Rav Nachman walked out, Omar Lohu Ula, Ula turned to those around him and said, Hachi Yom Rabbi Lazar, this is what Rabbi Lazar really said. Avilu miyazmi, even from heirs. Oh, that would indicate then that avodim are like land. If children inherit land, real estate from their father, and their father did not pay off all his debts, the original creditors can collect from karka. And by saying that Rabbi Lozer says the creditors can collect the slaves that they inherited, that indicates that avodim are like karka. Now, Ula reported this after Rav Nachman walked out. But Rav Nachman heard about this. And on the side of the Gemara, we have a nosei, we call it Hemshech, a continuation of this topic, Shitas Rav Nachman Bagdoras Evan. We're going to be interested in hearing what Rav Nachman's opinion is in how to categorize slaves, like land or portables. Omar Rav Nachman, Ishtamten Ula. Ula was afraid of me. In other words, to my face, Ula was not willing to say that Avodim are like Karka. Only once I walked out. Rashi says, according to Rav Nachman, was afraid that he would be, if he would say that Yesaimim, inheriting slaves, are subject to their being collected, namely that Avodim are like Karka, I would have refuted him. And that's why Ula waited till I walked out before he said that Avodim are like Karka. Let's continue in the Gemara, though. We have referred to this section as Shitas Rav Nachman regarding an Eved. Havei Ufta Benarda, there was an actual incident in Naharda where someone died, his heirs inherited slaves, Ve'agvu Dayone de Naharda, and the judges of Naharda enabled the collection of those slaves to be made in payment of their father's debt. That is a ruling like Ula, Ula number two. Have Uvdo Pumbadisa Agve Rav Chana Bar Bizna. The same thing happened in Pumbadisa, and Rav Chana ruled collection can be made from the slaves, just like Ula. Omar Lahu Rav Nachman Zilu Ajuru. Rav Nachman says you better reverse it. Return those slaves to the orphans, to the heirs. Vilo. And if you don't, Magvinon Lahu Laapadnaichu. If not, then I'm going to collect your houses in payment of the debt. Omar le Rava le Rav Nachman. Rava says to a very upset Rav Nachman. He says, "I want to understand things. Ha Ula, ha Rav Elazar, ha Dayana de Nardo, ha Rav Chana Bar Bizna. All of these names hold that Avodim are like Karka, and they are a means of paying off father's debts. They can be collected from the Yesaimim. And you don't agree with any of them, Mor Kaman Svirole. Well, you, who do you hold like? Who holds that Avodim are like Metaltalin, that are viewed as portables? Omar Leh. So Rav Nachman says, Anomas Nisiodana, I know a Tanaic source that, in all due respect to all those you quoted, they're not as strong as a Tanaic source. The Tani Avimi. Avimi, the name of a great scholar, he taught the following Tanaic source. And in this Tanaic source, we will see the idea that Avodim are viewed as portables. There are two unrelated points, two halachas, but there's a theme, a common theme behind these halachas. Number one, Prusbol, Chal al Hakarka ve'eno Chal al Havodim. Prusbol is a rabbinic enactment enabling people to collect their debts after the sabbatical year. Generally on a strictly Torah level, debts are canceled by the passage of a Shemitah year. People in anticipation of Shemitah arriving will very much hesitate to extending loans, knowing that the loans can be canceled by the passage of Shemitah. So the rabbis enacted the Prusbol. The Prusbol is binding or is effective only in a case where the borrower, the one who owes the money, happens to also own some land. So we say that the Prusbol can be prepared, chal ala karka. It takes hold, is effective, if the debtor has karka v'eino chal avodim, but it will not be effective if the debtor merely has slaves. So you see right away that slaves are not parallel to karka. And another point, metaltalin niknim im hakarka v'einam niknim im hoavodim. When you make a transaction on land, and you, the purchaser, are interested in, along with the purchase, of land, and we'll see shortly slaves. Along with that, you're interested in purchasing someone's portables. So that you're, let us say, you're buying a piece of land, and you're also going to be buying his microwave oven, or his set of cutlery, or his pencils, or whatever, but portables. So the rule says, the halacha says, that metaltalin, portables, niknin imakarka, that when you make a transaction on land, and it's intended that you're also interested in acquiring the portables, the designated portables, your kinyan, your active transaction that you do to the real estate, enables you to thereby acquire the metaltalin without doing any further active acquisition on the portables. The portables are included in the transaction, active transaction that you do regarding the karka, the land. However, the einon nikdim im havodim. If you are making a transaction on slaves, you're buying slaves. And the same scenario as above, you wanted to also acquire portables in that deal. The portables are not acquired by your kinyan, by your active transaction regarding the slaves. So that if you did some type of act which indicates acquisition of slaves, you'll still have to do a separate act of acquisition in order to acquire the portables. What does that show you? It shows you very clearly that avodim are not viewed as karka. Are not viewed, avodim, slaves, are not viewed as land. Lemo ketanoi. The topic continues, as we said, till the top part of Yud Beis Omid Beis, so that even though we're in the context of a Daf Yomi Shiur, because we're in the midst of this discussion, we don't want to break it prematurely, and we'll be spilling over in the Daf Yud Aleph Shiur will be spilling over to the top of Yud Beis Omid Beis. So our Gemara says Lema Ketanoi. On the side of the Gemara, our Nosei / Mivne heading, we indicate number one, Nisoyon Lahamid Hagdoras Eved Kikarko Metalkin Kemachlikis Tanoyim. An attempt to say that this issue, how to categorize a slave as portables or as land, is a Tanaic controversy. When you look at the Gemara text itself, you'll notice that this is part of a long question. Shall we say it's a Tanaic controversy? And as you skim the source, and you'll notice that the latter part of the frame source, Aleph and Beis in diamonds, these represent two Tanaic opinions. And as a result of these two opinions, we're gonna try to conclude that the issue of how to categorize slaves is, in fact, like lands or like portables, a machlokes tanoim. So now the Gemara, lema ketanoi. We noted above this ta'ayin seifa to look focus on the end of the source. That's what we just did verbally. So now the Gemara says lema ketanoi. Shall we say that the issue of how to categorize slaves, i.e. as land or portable, is a Tanaic disagreement? It says in the following source, Mochar lo avodim v'karkois. A person transacted slaves and property and real estate. Hichsik b'avodim lo kona karkois, b'karkois lo kona avodim. The chazoka is a means of transaction, taking over. The act of chazoka, of acquisition that you do to slaves, does not entitle you to acquire the land, even though there's mutual agreement on the part of the buyer and the seller to transact both. The chazoka that you make on avodim is not effective in transferring the land, and likewise the act of chazoka on the karkois, on the land, does not result in the transfer of the slaves. There's a Rashi across from here says the karka lekon avodim, the afagav de svirale lahai tana avodim kemetatlin dami. even though this Tanaic opinion holds, and this we'll only see later on, but Rashi is already foretelling this, that this opinion holds that slaves are like portables, and we know that portables are acquired along with land. Even so, the act of acquisition that you do on the karka does not get you the metal, the avodim. Alma, elo, elo im king, oimed oevid besoicha, bishas, bishoshi, sikbo, kinemtasel, come on. There is an exception, however, if the slave is standing in the middle of the ground, in the middle of the real estate being transacted, then you will get the slave. Shiny metapti the 90, metapti the 90. We'll leave that aside for now. That the Gemara will explain later. Let's continue in our source. Second case, karkois metaplin, person is transacting land and portables. The transaction that you make on the land entitles you to gain immediate ownership of the portables. However, the chazakah that you make on the portables does not entitle you to acquire the land. We didn't point out earlier, but there is a scriptural reference to this matter. It's a posuk in Divrei Hayomim where these ideas are reflected. And now we get interested. Avodim umetaplin. A person is transacting slaves and portables. Hichzik b'avodim lo kona metaplin, b'metaplin lo kona avodim. The chazokah, the act of acquisition regarding the slaves, does not get you the portables. And the reverse as well. The act of acquisition on the portables does not acquire for you the slaves. V'hotanya, but do we not have a source that says hichzik b'avodim kona metaltalin, the transaction that you make, the act of acquisition that you make on the slave, thereby gives you automatically ownership of the portables. My lav behal komifligi. Is it not so that the point of disagreement is as follows? The more so far, the base approach, the second approach suggests, avodim kemekarkoi domi. Slaves are like land. What is the din? What is the law if you make a transaction or you make an act of acquisition on land? Do you get the portables along with that? Yes. So too, base said, your act of acquisition on the slaves gets you the portables, just like as if the avodim were land. Umar Savar, the Aleph approach that said your act of acquisition on the slaves does not get you the portables, because he holds avodim kimetafelin dummy, because avodim themselves are like portables, so an act of acquisition on one portable doesn't get you another portable. So at this point the Gemara is suggesting that avodim, how to categorize them, like metaltalin or karka, is a machlokes tanoim, Tanaic source Aleph versus Tanaic source Beis. At this point, though, we'll show you a reversal, departure from that suggestion, and note the markings. We have a crown shape. We noted Aleph later, an inverted crown introduced by an Ikah de Amri, a second version of Rav Ika. So on the side of the Gemara, you'll see the two crowns featured. They represent Shnei Lishonos, two versions of Rav Ika. Lomar, Shatanoyim Shuvo Leel, Benisoyin, Enom Choykin, Behagdoras Eved. The point of these two versions is to say that the Tanoyim that were brought above to show in our attempt that the issue is a machlokes tanayim, are not arguing in how to categorize an eved. What are they arguing about? So that we'll have to see in the Gemara. But let's make it clear that whether you hold like Rav Ika Aleph or Rav Ika Beis, you'll notice the markings. Always take advantage of the markings whenever you can. Looking at Aleph of Rav Ika, the line under that, you see a dashed underline, the Kuli Alma Avodim Kimekarkoi Domi. Everyone holds, all the Tanaim agree, that Avodim are like land. Look at the inverted Rav Ika crown. There, the dashed underline that appears afterwards, the kuliyama avdi kemetatli domi. Everyone is in agreement that they're like portables. So that, according to Aleph and Beis, the Tanoim we saw above are not arguing how to categorize avodim. What are they arguing about? So that we have to go on in the Gemara to find out. The Gemara. Omer Ravika Brei Duravami. The Kulei Almo Avodim Kimekar Koi Domi. Everyone, means the Tanoim above, Aleph and Beis, agree in principle that avodim are like land. Ha'aditanya Kono Shapir. And source Beis in the diamond above that said your kinyan on avodim acquires for you automatically the metalklin, that is Shapir. That's fine. That doesn't need any explanation. Once you tell me that avodim are like karka, then we know when a transaction that you make on real estate acquires for you then and there the portables. Ha'aditanya Lo Kono. Source Aleph that says your transaction, your act of acquisition on slaves does not get for you the portables. Why not? Once you say that avodim are like land, answer, bo'inon karka dumya de'orim mitzuros b'Yehuda de'lo naidi. There's a phrase here, orim mitzuros b'Yehuda is a reference to a verse. If you skip down just a couple lines, you see a verse from Divrei Yomim in the Gemara, Vayitein loim aviyem matonus rabus lekesiv lezov ulemigdonos im orei mitzuros b'Yehuda. There was a transaction, a transfer of property. Their father was giving them kesiv and zov, all kinds of silver and coin and gold. These are all portables together with orei mitzuros b'Yehuda. These are fortified cities in Judea. Well, cities are land. Along with the acquisition of the cities were these other portables. So that opinion Aleph above, and you'll notice we go back to the Gemara before we skip down a few lines. We said Vaha de Tanya lo kona, where the Aleph is appears in a diamond in parentheses. Why is it that the act of kinyan that you make on the avodim, the act of acquisition that you made on the slaves, does not acquire for you the portables? Because bo'inon karka, we require karka that's dumya, that's similar to orim mitzuros b'Yehuda, the lo naidi, similar to cities that are not movable. Avodim are, they move, they're naidi, the snan. The source says nechosim shein machrayas. Nechosim shein machrayas is a catchword for metatalin, catchphrase for metatalin. It's translated as properties that don't bear a guarantee, meaning loans and debts are not paid off through metatalin. When they're transferred to other people, when they're sold to others or bequeathed to others. So portables. Nechosim shein machrayas niknim im nechosim shiyesh lohem achrayas. Portables are acquired with nechosim shiyesh lohem achrayas. What does that refer to? Obviously, it refers to land. It's property that bears a guarantee that people's debts are paid off through collecting their land, even if their land is transferred to others. So that portables are acquired together with the acquisition of land, bekesef b'shtar b'chazaka, when the means of transfer of the land, of the nechosim sheshal machrayas, is done through the formal means of transfer of ownership, whether it be cash payment, a shtar, a document that's prepared indicating the transfer, or chazaka, an act, a physical act of acquiring the land. Mino hanimili. From where do we know that portables are acquired along with land? Omar Chizkio, diomar kro. Chizkio cites the pasuk vayitel maviem natonis rabois lekesef ulezov lemigdonis im arei mitzuros b'Yehuda. Their father gave unto them gifts, many gifts of silver, gold, and other pleasantries, together with the fortified cities of Judea. So that, upon their acquiring the orim mitzuros, the cities, they were thereby acquiring the Kesef, Zav, and Megdonos. As a result of that, we see that land is effective in creating and drawing along with it portables, provided the land in question is like the Are Mitzura Biuda. Slaves, yes, they are viewed as land. However, that kind of land that does not enable portables to be acquired along with them, because avodim are not like the Are Mitzuras Biuda, which are low 90, which do not move. Slaves do have locomotion. Ika diamri, another approach, in fact an opposite approach. Omar Rav Ika Brei Duravami Dekuli Alma Avdi Kemetatali Domi. Slaves are viewed as standard portables. Toha de Tanya Lo Kono Shapir. And the Tanaic source above that said Lo Kona, that was the source Aleph. That is understandable. That's smooth sailing. That once you say that the act of acquisition that you do on slaves does not get you along with that portables, that's because slaves themselves are portables, and portables don't enable you to acquire other portables. Ha desanya kuna, the source that said you do acquire portables along with the transaction you made on the slaves, the oidon olav, the portables in question were on the slave. The Gemara asks a question. You'll notice a few lines. And if the portables are on the slave, so what? How does that make it effective? How does it make the acquisition of the slave effective in acquiring for you the portables? Chotzer ma'alechesi. It's like a moving courtyard. For chotzer ma'aleches lo kana, a moving chotzer doesn't enable you to acquire other things along with it. V'chitema ba'oimed, you might say, well, the Eved stands still. He doesn't move. So he's not mahaleches. He's not walking. That doesn't help. V'omar rova kol she'ilu mahalech lo kona, oimed v'yoshev lo kona. Anything that, if it were to move, would prevent acquisition of additional items, even when that entity stands or sits, you're still not going to get along with it other portables. So what does Rav Ika mean here when he says that source bays, that is a case where the slave had the portables upon him? How does that work? V'hilchisa b'kofus. So the Gemara explains that source bays will be understood where the slave is bound. He's kufus, he's tied up. Tosfos adds, based on other Gemaras, not only is he tied up, but he's tied up and he is asleep as well. We're not going to get into the details. We just wanted to note that additional point you can see in Tosfos. The Gemara presents a source, V'ha Tanya Hichzik Bekarka Kona Avodim. Above, by the way, we have a little arrow to the side of the Gemara text. Above, it said, in the case of the transaction of Avodim and Karka, it said, Bekarkois lo kona Avodim. And here we have a source that says, Hichzik Bekarka kona Avodim. Is this not a contradiction in sources? The Gemara says, Hosam ba'oimdim b'soicha. There, where we say, in this source, Hosam, that we say, Kona, the source we just read, that is where the slaves are standing in the property, in the real estate. They're standing upon the real estate, so when you make the kinyan on the real estate, you get the slaves. Well then, Michlal Dahai Lo Kona, Kishain Oimden Besocha. And it would stand to reason that the source above that said Lo Kona, that you don't get the slaves with your acquisition of the land, that the slaves were not standing on the property. So we're making a distinction between slaves standing on the land versus not standing on the land. Ha-nicha, this resolution of the two sources works out well. Lahach lishna diomar aviko brei deravami avdi kemetalteli domi. If you view, in principle, slaves as portables, that was like the Bayes version of Raviko, the inverted crown marking just a few lines up. According to that version, avodim are viewed as portables. Oh, so with that in mind, hainu, we then understand the oimde b'soicha in ilolo. If the slaves are standing in the property, so then they're acquired along with the property. If the slaves are not standing within the property, they're not acquired along with the property. But according to the version that labeled slaves as karka, lomali oimden b'soicha, what need is there for the slaves that you're viewing as karka to be standing on the land? In other words, you're trying to explain the source that said konavodim is because they're standing standing on the property. What do I need that for? Ha Omar Shmuel, when you're dealing with land transfer, say multiple land transfer. Shmuel says, Mocha lo eser sodus b'eser medinos, person sold 10 parcels of land in 10 different countries. Kevon chichsik ba'achas mehen kona kulan. When you make your transaction on one, you thereby acquire all the others. So you did a physical act of acquisition on a piece of land in one country, you thereby acquire 9 other parcels of land. So that if you're going to view avodim, slaves, as land, there's no need for one to be upon the other. The Gemara continues with a response. Note that we have a long response, a long answer marking. Uletamech, according to you, that said things work out well according to version Bayes of Rav Ika. You said that things work out well if you consider avodim like portables. Things work out well. Uletamech, uletamech, lahach lishno diomar avdi kimetalteli domi. According to that particular approach, loma li oime besoicha, why would the source that said hichzik bekarka kon avodim, and you would try to explain that by saying that the avodim are standing on the land, why do you need the avodim to be on the land? Just because they're metatalin, you require to be on the land in order to be acquired along with the land? That's not so. Hal kaimolon de loboinon sivurin. But we have as a rule, we're reading at the top of Omid Beis, that we don't require, Tzvur means piled upon the land. No. In other words, if you make a kinyan on karka, and the intention in the deal is to transfer portables along with the karka, the portables need not be upon the land. And yet, you were willing to say that when it comes to avodim as being like portables, like metalin, they'll be acquired with the land only if they're on the land. Well, why would you say that? Elamai yisloch lemeimar. What is there for you to say? When on the one hand we know that portables need not be upon the land, why then, in the case of avodim, which you're considering like portables, need it be upon the land? Ah, you're going to have to say shiny metalteli de naidi mi metalteli de lo naidi. There is room for making a distinction within the realm of portables, those portables that are nighty, that have internal self-locomotion, versus those kind of portables that are dormant, that are inanimate, that don't have any internal locomotion. Namely, in the case of metalta the nighty, those that have their own locomotion, then in order for them to be acquired along with the land, they need to be on the land literally. the halacha of lo boinin sevurin, that's with regard to metaltelin that don't have internal locomotion, all kinds of inanimate portables. So once you descend into this level of resolution, of distinction, well, hachinami, I will say the same thing, categorizing avodim like karka, like Ravika version Aleph. There's no question on him either. We said before that if you make a kinyan on one parcel of land and you intend to transfer nine other parcels in nine other countries without having to make a kinyan on those nine other parcels of land, that's because that's karka, that's low 90, that's inanimate karka. It's non-movable, non-self-locomotion karka. So we read in our Gemara, Hochinami, so too with regard to version Aleph of Rav Ika, Shiny Makarki de Naidi Mimakarki, the low 90. A distinction is made between Karka that's 90, like slaves. There we require Besocho, it has to be in the land itself. The slave has to be upon the land. And Mimakarki de low 90 as opposed to parcels of land, fields, houses, or what have you, that are, don't have their own locomotion. Then you have the din of Shmuel that said, Mochalos Eser Sodos Beser Medinos, once you make a chazok on one, you automatically get the others. And with that in mind, Avda equals Makarkili Denaidihu. Slaves is as karka, like Rav Ika Aleph, like the first version of Rav Ika. Slaves are like karka, however, movable karka. And therefore, they need to be upon the land. And and that's the source that said, Hifzik b'karka kon avodim, because the avodim, which are karka denaiti, were upon the land. The din of Shmuel, hasam, that you don't need the karka to be upon the karka. Hasam sadna darachanu, there, you're, the globe, the earth, sadna the ara, is one. In other words, everything on the earth's globe are ultimately all part of one solid piece. So that the kinyan that you're making on one part of the globe and one piece of land is in effect connected, is physically connected to all the other parcels of land, regardless of what country or even on what continent they might be located. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.